You're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Robin Hilton. I first heard Bryan Ferry when he was 26 years old, singing lead in the freshest and most original rock band of the early 70s, Roxy Music. Ferry's croon was such potent counterpoint to the glam and eerie electronic rock of that band. Early on, he found another home for his voice, making his first album under his own name in 1973. He covered 60s rock and roll and 1930s standards. His music's been a combination of all those things ever since. Bryan Ferry is now 69 years old, his voice a bit deeper, his swoon even more alluring. His new album, Avonmore, comes out November 18th. It's his 14th record. Avonmore's named for a London street where his studio is and where he made this and many of his records. Johnny Marr, the guitar player, plays on this. So does Nile Rodgers. We'll talk about the players, how this record came to be, and about the music that changed his life. Co-host Robin Hilton and I are in Washington, D.C., and Bryan Ferry is at WNYC in New York. We begin with this song from Avonmore, Driving Me Wild. Lot going on there.
Tell us a little bit about what were we hearing at the top of the song there? It sounded like record scratches or something.
Yeah, it was all kinds of funny noises and all these things that kind of bring back memories for me, I suppose. I did the keyboards and Johnny Marr's playing the guitar, and then you hear Nile Rodgers enter on the chorus, Marcus Miller's playing the bass, and it's
there a sitar.
They have the way
this?
It turned out.
Sitar on this song? Is there a sitar?
Johnny Marr's quite credited, as at least on the credits we have, as sitar.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe some probably wishful thinking. Yeah.
You say it brings back lots of memories. What do you remember being in the studio with this song with some of your old friends?
Well, they're all kind of in there, I guess, at different times. Because I tend to start the thing on piano first. You know, I do the sketch on piano normally at home, and then I bring it to the studio later, and then start turning it into something. You know,
do you turn parts over to the other musicians you work with, especially people like this you've worked with for a long time, or do you give them a very specifically composed?
Oh,
sections.
No. I give them a free rein normally because I know how sympathetic they will play, you know. Over the years, you get to form really kind of firm musical bonds with people, you know. And I first worked with some of these guys on Boys and Girls back in 83. So we go back quite a long way. But I always like to be there, you know. And kind of supervise what they're doing, kind of. Although I like them to play themselves, you know, and to have as much freedom as they want. But I'll always edit things later, you know.
I mean, could you imagine in 83, still working with many of the same people?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's It's like a band that is together but isn't together. It's rather nice that there's that kind of longevity there. Of course, there's always room for young people to come in as well. So a couple of the young guys from my touring band are now kind of, they've qualified to come onto the record as well.
So and then on drums, speaking of young, is your son?
My son Tara, yeah. Yeah, he plays great drums on this album, and he's still at art college, so he kind of doesn't do it all the time, but playing drums, that is. But he played great on this record and brought a lot to it in the last few months.
Let's play another cut. I want to play Midnight Train. We'll talk. Love the huge sound that's happening here, but I'm gonna do something here. I'm gonna list a bunch of names for people. These are just the guitar players. You have Johnny Marr, right, from the Smiths and more. Nile Rodgers from Chic. You have Steve Jones, best probably known Sex Pistols. Jacob, is it Chris Gard? Is that how you say it?
Steve. That Steve Jones is a different Steve Jones.
Oh, okay.
He's the Irish Steve Jones who plays in my band now.
Excellent. Okay.
Although the other Steve correction. Jones is great too.
Yeah. Mm. And thanks for correcting. Jacob, is it Chris Gard?
Chris Gard. Yeah, he's Danish, and
he's been with you a while.
Yeah.
Oliver Thompson, Neil Hubbard, Dave Williams. Yeah. Chris Spedding, who's a name I have not seen or heard in a while, just made some brilliant instrumental and music in the middle 70s, but also as a guitar player, played with John Cale,
he's
terrific, probably
list Chris.
Better than I here.
Yeah, and Chris has toured with me many times as well, he was on tour with me last year, and Neil Hubbard, who's been a big part of my recording career, really, he played on the Avalon album with Roxy, and lots of solo records I did. Neil Hubbard, he does the lead parts on this track, and he's a beautiful player.
So with nine guitarists, are there no overdubs then? You just brought them all in at the same time?
No.
I love that idea.
No, they're all given their 15 minutes of fame. Yeah, we sort it out later.
How do you organize that? I mean, this is, you have the song, you maybe wrote it on piano, you have an idea, you want to expand it in the studio. Rhett Davis produced this, as he's done for so many of things that you've done over the years. Great, great producer. How do you organize this? How do you even decide on who and what they...
Oh, dear. It just happens over a period of time. People come in and drift in and out, and they contribute things, and I don't know. It all becomes part of the jigsaw, which we then laboriously put together. Rhett and I go back a long way, since he was a young tape operator on Another Time, Another Place. That was the first time I worked with him. Right. And
people might know him from engineering, maybe more songs
Eno,
about building food, yep. Talking Heads, with Brian Eno, Take
yeah,
the Tiger
right.
Mountain.
That's correct, yes. Yeah. So he worked with Brian a lot. And but the first person he worked with was me, I think, in Another Time, Another Place.
Could you describe
making the tea?
Someone's got to do it.
But somebody's really got to do it.
Can you describe the sound that he helps you make? I mean, what is it?
He helps me make judgments, really, and especially when I'm singing and kind of. It's always good to have somebody that is really reliable, whose taste you understand, who understands you yourself as an artist, and you understand his points of view. So we know how to argue with each other, and that's quite good because you have to have somebody who will stand up to you and say, "Oh, I think you're right there rather than here," you know, and that's very important, really.
I can imagine some of the conversations being as simple as, was that take or that part of the song sung right? What are some of the other conversations that would happen between the two of you?
He'll tell me about his golf game and all kinds of stuff, you know.
I guess I was thinking more in relation to making the song, but...
he's very good when we're kind of recording people. There's, you know, thousands of different moments that are pieced together in the end.
There's so many people involved in making this record and with each of the tracks we see here in the credits, but there's always such a warmth and intimacy in the songs themselves. I'm wondering where it starts for you. Do you write alone at home quietly and then bring these in?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, usually, I guess it's usually at night, you know, when the day is over, and it's just me and the piano. And the piano is such a great instrument. Not that I play it that great, but I play it well enough to write songs on, and I've got this lovely old, I've had it for many years, this Steinway piano. Mm. I've had it since about 72 or 73 maybe. Yeah, I love the sound it makes.
And they just get better.
Yeah, that's true, they do. And I use a kind of cassette player, which I just switch on, and if there's anything that I like, then I'll take it to the studio on a later date and play it to Rhett and see what he thinks. And usually we have the same sort of taste about, you know, which melodies are going to make it and which ones aren't, you know. It's exciting. There are different stages, different parts of the process that happen between the initial kind of tune that just happens on the piano and then the finished piece when the record's made. So many different sounds and so many different guys who put their heart into it, and it's fantastic, really, what happens in the end. And you get all these people who play, you know, very kind of emotional music sometimes, and it's fabulous.
Are you a night owl? Is that when you sort of find yourself
kind
coming
of
to life?
Yeah, sort of. Sometimes there's just too many distractions in the daytime, you know. So maybe that's why the music always, to me, seems to have a nighttime mode. And if I'm doing a festival, I would much prefer to play in the evening, in the dark, rather than in the daylight. A bit like a vampire, you know.
Well, your music suits that. In fact, I wonder how you describe your own music. It is a singular sound for so long. You know, and one of the reasons we brought you on for the Valentine's Day show we did a year and a half ago or so was because of that. There's so much about romance, not just love, but romance in your songs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to describe it, really. I guess that's why I'm a musician. When Charlie Parker said, music speaks louder than words, you know.
Yeah.
And, there is a romance in music, which... it's undeniable, and I've found it in so many other artists' work. You know, at home I play a lot of jazz because I like to hear people improvising, you know, and so people like Coleman Hawkins, Charlie Parker again, lots of different people I listen to, and it's great to hear people's imagination running away with them on an instrument if they play really well. Somebody like Django Reinhardt, for instance, it carries you off into another world. And there's a true romance in it. There's a kind of loneliness in it as well, in the sound, which I find appealing as well.
Do you find that loneliness in a song that I was really surprised to see you cover, Send in the Clowns, the Stephen Sondheim song? Yeah. Would that be something that attracted you to a cut like that?
Oh, very much so. I like sad music, and that's a beautiful sad song. And the fact that it comes from a Broadway a musical is good, because some of the great songs have come from musicals. And Cole Porter used to write for musicals, of course. It's a great tradition, and I've never done anything by Sondheim before, but that's a beautiful, beautiful song with a beautiful haunting lyric. And as a singer, I'm always looking for a good lyric to sing, you know. There's another cover on the album by Robert Palmer, a song called Johnny and Mary, which I've always liked that song. It has a kind of bittersweet romance to it.
Let's play a little of the Sondheim first. I'd like to find out from you what you think this song tells the story of. Obviously, in the Broadway, it's very specific, but in the bigger scheme of things, what the song is about to you. Speaks to you about the words here, and what do you think?
Well, it's very, very sad. It's like the end of a very beautiful love affair, you know. And yeah, it's a very, very emotional song, I think.
These people have gone different ways, I suppose. The couple, each in their own direction.
That's right. Yeah, and the realization of that, and it's put into words and music, and he captures that really beautifully, I think. Yeah, poignant. It was great to hear that guitar again. It's a sort of backwards guitar that Johnny Marr played on the track, which I think adds to the kind of mystery of the lyric for me.
Have you ever imagined doing a musical? You have any desire to write one?
Yeah,
so many musicians, make that move to.
It would be lovely to put my songs into a musical one day, and. So if you guys have any idea.
Well, I was going to ask you if you already had
some
ideas.
Got a story? the songs are all there, so it just needs a story to piece them together, I guess.
Or the other challenge, and when I was thinking about it, and you and the idea of, like, what makes a song like Sending the Clowns work so well is that the writer of the song has a very focused thing they have to accomplish. Mm-hmm. You know, which is different when you may go in to write a song. You're just from your head, whatever's on your mind is one thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're told, hey, this couple gets together, they haven't seen each other in 27 years, blah, blah, blah.
And this is the moment where, the grand denouement or something, yes.
Yeah, and that's such a cool way to write. It's such a wonderful challenge.
It's great to have a challenge, actually, and a focus, as you say. It happened to us when we were working on the Great Gatsby soundtrack with Baz Luhrmann, the director, he'd heard the Jazz Age record and wanted to have some 1920s sounding music for his movie, and even though he was kind of using hip-hop music as the main soundtrack, he came to my studio and he sort of commissioned us really to do some pieces which worked out really well, one of them being Back to Black, which is an Amy Winehouse song. So we did that in the 19, as we imagined, the 1920s people would have done it.
I know. I think of the director Paul Thomas Anderson when he did Magnolia. That film was based largely on stories from songs by Amy Mann, and it's very easy to imagine so many of the stories in your in your songs coming together in one scene.
I certainly like to see Dream Home on stage. That would be nice.
Okay, everybody, let's pull our resources together.
We can do this.
Let's Kickstarter it.
Exactly.
You did the string arrangements on that beautiful version.
Together with Colin Good, who is brilliant. Colin is a wonderful keyboard player, and he's worked with me for about 12 years. And he's not in the current touring band, but he's done loads of tours with me, and he's a fantastic arranger.
Do you write parts? How does string arranging?
He writes them down, but I kind of sing him bits that I'd like to go in, and it's a great bit of teamwork, really. But I couldn't do it without him, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the artists these days that newer artists that for some people would be Terje Olsen or Todd Terje, guess is that how you say his
Todd
name?
Terje.
Well, I say Todd Terje. You can say Todd Terje is, I think, is the kind of way the Norwegians would say it, but it's pretty hard to say. I don't very often attempt it.
Right.
He's a friend of my son Isaac, and my son Isaac has kind of been in charge of delegating dance mixes to people because he's very much in tune with that world and being a DJ himself a bit. And Todd Terje is really good. He did a couple of remixes for us, one of Love is a Drug and one of Don't Stop the Dance a couple of years ago. And then I thought it would be nice to record something with him, so he came to my studio in London, and we worked on Johnny and Mary together, and then he went back to Norway and completed it and mixed it and stuff, and so he put it on his album, and I put it in the end on my album as well, because I thought it added another dimension to it, which worked really well. I also did a show with him in Oslo. It was a big festival called the Oya Festival last summer, and that was great to see Johnny and Mary being received so well by this very young audience who, you know, Robert Palmer would have been very pleased to see it, I think.
Robert Palmer, of course, the writer, for those who don't know, of the song Johnny and Mary. Let's play a little bit of it. And in the same way of Sending the Clowns, another story song, another couple.
Yeah, very much. Another haunting melody as well.
Mm. Let's hear a bit.
Thank you.
You really took hold of this song and made this one your own. I love when that happens with when you cover songs.
Oh, thank you.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's a kind of it's a minimalist approach to the song compared with a lot of the things I do, and it's nice to have that
guitars,
kind of bleak space.
Yeah, it really works for your voice, which I was thinking about. Robin and I were talking about this earlier, which is the idea that, well, first of all, when you were 20, imagining singing into your 60s, probably not, right?
Yeah,
would be my guess. It's
strange, isn't it?
Your voice still feels strong and not all that different than anything I'd heard, you know, 20, 30 years. Maybe it's harder for you to lay down the tracks, but certainly, I don't know, I'm making that up, but certainly in the end, the results is this warm, wonderful quality we've always heard from you. And I'm wondering about age and voice.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you, well, obviously, as you get older, your voice kind of gets deeper. And there are certain...
That's a given?
Keys. Yeah, I think that happens all the time, I think.
Bob's voice should be like 3 octaves lower than it is. That just doesn't make any sense.
Anyway... yeah, I've noticed that you know there's certain notes I wouldn't be able to hit now, which I could when I first started singing. And but there again, then there are things I can do now that I couldn't do then. So I guess it evens itself out in the end.
Yeah, Leonard Cohen's is nearly subsonic. That new record is tremendous. Yeah. I don't know if you've spent time with
it. I haven't heard
it
yet.
Have you heard Marianne Faithfull's record, by the way?
No,
she's got she covers you on this, right?
Oh, really? No.
Oh, wait a minute now. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she does. Hank, can I just 1 second? Because if you haven't heard it, maybe I should play a little Marianne Faithfull. Because both again, a voice with good age to it. I would have thought she'd give you a buzz.
Yeah. Well, your voice does.
The Price of Love.
Oh, really? No.
Do you want to hear it?
Call my lawyer.
Sure. Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Hey, give me the cable, unless you have it.
I might have it here. Let's see.
A little more.
Yeah, it sounds good.
You talk too much, you laugh too loud, you see her face in every crowd. That's the price of love, the price of love, a debt you pay with tears and pain. The price of love, the price of love.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Good for her.
When did you first record that song?
Way back. It was about 75, yeah. 74, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Chris Spedding played on it.
Yeah, I would imagine there are circles that the two of you, Marianne Faithfull and you may
sounds like he might have played on that one as well.
We'll find out. I don't have the liner
really
notes
good.
At all.
Chris is great.
Bob mentioned, you know, how your sound, there are songs on this record that you could have done 20, 30 years ago. Is there someone in your mix of artists that you work with over the years you can rely on to push you into new directions? Would that be someone like Johnny Marr? I know he co-wrote the song Soldier of Fortune on this new record.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny is a very good spirit. I mean, he's going to... true rock and roll spirit, you know, he lives the music, and he's fantastic.
How'd you find each other?
Very, oddly enough, through a guy called John Porter, who produced one of the early Smiths albums. Oh. Might have been their first or second album, I think. Anyway, John played with me on For Your Pleasure. He played bass on Do the Strand and all those songs. And he also played on Hard Rain's Gonna Fall and co-produced the first solo album I did. He's a brilliant guy who lived in New Orleans for many years, and we went to college together. So I met Johnny Marr through him. We worked together on the Right Stuff, on the Bette Noir record, I think, and then recently on this album.
What direction do you see your songs going in as soon as he's added to the mix?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think he adds a bit of rock and roll to it. I mean, he rocks out a bit more than some of the guitar players I work with.
How about a song like Soldier of Fortune? How did you guys come to write that together?
That one's a very sort of tender sort of bit of guitar playing, really, which started with this riff that Johnny was playing in the studio, and we built it up from that.
Let's play a little of it.
An ambassador of pain. I have the world on a string, and I threw it all away. I'm a prince of illusions, heart spinning round my brain.
Drums sound so nice on this.
Oh, my son will be very happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, really.
He's a great
nice
drummer all through this record. Yeah. I didn't know until today who was playing what, but I thought, who is that drummer?
Yeah, he really came into himself on this.
How old is he, roughly?
He's 24.
Wow.
And he's still at art college, actually.
Right.
But he put his heart and soul into this album, and especially that track. He loved that track.
I bet he had good teachers around.
Yeah, he certainly did. He had Andy Newmark for a start, who is brilliant. And Andy plays on a couple of things on the album with Tara. And, of course, Tara's listened to all the... I try and play to all the great drummers, like Al Jackson, you know, and Bernard Purdy and all those people. And so he's had a good education musically, I think.
And for you, I mean, you've been doing this music thing for a whole long time. Is there something that inspired you to start doing it? Is there a song that may have changed you, that got you somewhere on the path to who and what you became?
Well, there are lots of songs, really, but
sure.
I don't know. I'll always say that when I hitchhiked from Newcastle down to London to see Otis Redding and the Stax Review, with Sam and Dave and Eddie Floyd and Steve Cropper and all those great musicians, and Booker T, etc. That was the kind of road to Damascus for me, really. And when I decided I really want to do this, I was seeing all these people together on stage playing this beautiful music, and that's when it all kind of came together for me.
And that drummer was Al Jackson?
Was Al Jackson, yeah.
And in that world of music, I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to ask you, is there a song in particular that more than anything touched your soul, made you want to sing, any of that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's loads of great songs that they did. But I suppose Dock of the Bay is the most famous one. And that's a beautiful record.
Have you ever done that?
by the way?
No.
Ooh, the way you said no, it's almost like you don't want to touch that.
No, that would have been a bit sort of sacred ground, that one.
Do you remember where you were when you first heard that?
No, I was at college. 1967,
maybe.
67, I was at still at university, yeah. Still dreaming.
Mm. Otis had just died, right, when that song mm-hmm. came out.
That's right, yes. I saw the last tour that they did.
Wow. And what was he like on stage? I mean,
Dynamic. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely dynamic on stage. And as were Sam and Dave, of course. They were mm-hmm. they were incredible to watch as well. Loads of energy and held down by this incredible rhythm section and band.
Had you performed at all before you saw them? Is it anything about that that made you want to be a performer?
I'd done a couple of things with a college band, you know. But it was still very much just a kind of sideline for me. But when I saw that show, I really thought, I think I could see a way to kind of maybe creating something in that world. And happily we did.
I'm still thinking that about you hitchhiking to see a show, and I'm trying to think, any kid around today who would hitchhike, who wanted to see a show?
I guess
so
they don't
bad?
Do that anymore.
We'll get that letter because we have Uber fans, and someone's going to tell us that they do.
That they've hitchhiked. I want to know, if you've hitchhiked to go see a show, then that's incredible. Yeah.
Thanks for spending time with us today. Thanks for the great music. We will put out the word that basically we need what? We need a somebody to write the story using your songs.
Yeah.
And we need a little a producer with some money.
Yeah, right, could be a help.
We'll give you a call.
Yes. Thanks. It's been a pleasure talking to you again.
Likewise.
Thanks so much.
Be well.
Bye.
Cheers. Brian Ferry. His new album is called Avonmoor. I'm Bob Boylan here with Robin Hilton for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
Don't miss me when I fall. You know I want to be with you. I'm not at all lost in the middle of the storm. So I'm forsaken and forlorn. I face her.